you've read Rich Dad Poor Dad, right?
Yeah.
Would you say that your dad is like talks down on real estate investing and real estate investors?
No, I think my dad was actually always very encouraging for those things. Dad was always someone who said, you can do it.
I feel like a lot of people have that same issue. They had a good dad, but they did not have a dad who was good at business.
You know, and my dad and my mom, you know, they split up when I was about four. You know, for me on a go-forward basis, was a really big reminder of seeing things that caused, you know, really a lot of damage for families. Welcome to Real Estate Dads Podcast with Trevor Celso and Max Gonzalez.
Do you plan on having your son, you know, your kids work in your business?
I plan on having them exposed.
I wonder how many people are looking at us right now, like, look at these young dads pontificating. Yeah,
you're totally correct. You're totally correct. You know, I know. We talk about topics for dads, for entrepreneurs in the real estate industry.
Welcome to the Real Estate Dads Podcast. We have special guest Matthew Owens, who we've known for a long time in the industry. He's definitely been someone who has a lot of experiences, does a lot in the business, raises capital for a lot of different types of projects, and we're going to hear more about those. But also we're going to talk about are just more of the experience he has being a father and his experience in work-life balance, and really just how his upbringing and current life, how those balance out with all of the work that he does, because he's a very busy individual, which he's going to tell us about. And we're looking forward to hearing his story. So Matthew, let's just jump over to you. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm excited about this topic. And I saw the topic. I was like, oh, this is different. That's awesome to talk about these things that nobody else talks about.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's one of those things that we're hoping you've got some, you know, I'll call it anything that is interesting for the listeners. Everyone has experience of growing up, things that their fathers did great, things that wish their fathers done differently. And then, of course, sadly, our kids are going to have things that are going to be the same. Or I shouldn't say sad, the good and the bad. But, you know, we're all working through, you know, our own fatherhood journeys. And, you know, we're so happy to have you share yours with us. So let's just jump right in. How many kids you got?
I have an 8-year-old son and a 5-year-old terrorist daughter. So she is a firecracker, I'll say. So it's pretty fun. Just like most parents, it's nonstop chaos in the household, of course.
I am sure. When did you start this business and how old were they at that point in time?
My story is, I'm a CPA. I was doing tax and audit for different CPA firms, graduated from UC Santa Barbara with a degree in economics with an emphasis in accounting, and quit my CPA firm job in 2006 to go into real estate full-time right before the real estate crash. So I was a real estate genius for about a year and a half before I got my ass handed to me, of course. But since then, we have flipped now over 1,000 houses. We have over $35 million lent out to flippers in different markets. I've raised over $150 million for real estate. We do a lot of value add multifamilies, mobile home parks. We invest in debt, doing all different and other businesses and things like that. And so I have great teams to help me and keep my sanity, of course. At the same time, you know, right in the middle of all this, my kids were born, right? So I would say an older father, where I was 37 when my son was born and I'm 45 now. I feel like I appreciate them more because I'm not in my 20s being a bad father, going out drinking probably still what I would have been doing, you know, if I was a younger father. And then it kind of changed my perspective where, yes, in the beginning, it's scary for fathers, right? We just want to like make sure we're going to provide and make sure that we're going to be able to create enough money to support our family. And it becomes almost like you can dive too deep into trying to fill that. And it becomes an emotional and psychological thing, right? Where you got to take that step back still and spend time with the kids, you know? So, and be in the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, you know, for me, it's stress. Like I look at all these things that I want to provide. And then, you know, to one thing we talked about before this podcast, but the kernel of that is to be there for the kids, you know, which is what we all, you know, want to work out and balance. So please continue. And that was so impressive. So 1,000 homes, raised $150 million for real estate deals. I mean, there were so many things that you mentioned in there. That was a lot. And I can only imagine that that was even a ramped up experience from when, you know, you started to now, which is just such a wide breadth of experiences.
Yeah, you know, I've got a lot of wrinkles from that, right? So, and my wife has been through a lot too, because of course, you know, when I take a loss, which you're going to take losses in this game, right? In any business. And when you go through trials and tribulations and, you know, stresses and all that kind of stuff, your family sees that on you, right? And they're right there with you a lot of times. I try to shield my wife from some of the stresses I go through because I'm like, half of it, 99% of my fear is not going to ever come to fruition. So why give her that fear? You know, and I take it on my shoulders myself, which could be to my detriment on my own stress level. Got to meditate a lot, you know, of course. But at the end of the day, you realize how much your business can affect your family too. I remember taking a loss and telling my wife, hey, I just lost, I remember $50,000. And back then it was that was a huge amount for me. And I was telling her, hey, put your hand on my chest. I can't breathe. I just lost a salary today. You know, like this is just a hard emotional thing to deal with. But then you realize when you have a mindset shift, like after that occurred, I remember getting up the next morning and saying, okay, I'm going to find a way to make this money back like today. What can I do right now? What action items can I do right now to make that back? And I ended up getting another deal under contract and wholesaling it to another 1031 exchange investor and making me $70,000 on that, you know, one deal. And that mindset shift for me enabled me that empowerment of getting through that adversity and emotionally coming over that. It wasn't really just like, you know, the hit wasn't going to ruin me, but at the same time, like emotionally, that was tough. But getting through the emotion of that helps you like really show the things that you want to teach your kids and take that step back and say, don't give them everything. Make life hard for them, you know, so that they, because it's like, what's the story? Like weak men create, you know, or I don't know what it was. Yeah, exactly. So don't let your kids be weak by pampering their butts, you know? So,
you know, you're bringing up a very real factor in the market right now, which is people hear of this, but it's victims of affluency. And, you know, and Jordan Peterson and Andrew Huberman talk about this, you know, quite a bit, where there's these, you know, you get dopamine from having merit-based accomplishments. And that's anything. You work hard and you get a dopamine reward as a result of that. And there's some individuals who unfortunately don't have that given to them. And that's one thing as a father that I recognize where, you know, I say, I really want to make sure I'm pushing my kids. And, you know, and one thing that, you know, you just kind of touched on and, you know, Trevor, I hope you don't have any stories of losing money, but if you know, in entrepreneurship, you know, these things occur, but you know, the black eyes that we get are also these experiences that we want to be able to, you know, come back from, learn from, and they carve us. They carve us, they make us better. And they also, you know, in your situation, you turned it into a win. You said, hey, I've got to fix this. This money was, you know, lost in whatever opportunity was, and you went out and said, hey, I've got it. You didn't let it sink you.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that you realize that these adversity things that actually happen to you push you in the direction you should be going anyways. And so even those losses are, you know, get to the point where you realize they are there for you to get through and to deal with the pain at the time you need it. And I know it sounds, you know, a little crazy, but at the same time, it really is 100% true. Like I just, about a year ago, a little bit more than that, I took a $400,000 plus hit from a contractor that stole a bunch of money from me. Right. And what's crazy is that because of the hits I took in the past and the adversity I got through, I'm able to just be like, okay, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm like went after the dude and did what I needed to do to make sure, but I'm still, you know, taking the L on it because it doesn't, you know, never is worth it. But, you know, emotionally, you're able to move forward with those things, which permeate into strength to show your kids because, you know, you could talk to your blue in the face, but if I'm doing the opposite of what I'm telling my kids, they're seeing what I'm doing, right? And it really makes you take that step back and look at yourself and say, how do I change myself? Because everything is internal 100% so that I can present the best light and teach my kids the most. And it really makes you have that yearning to have that self-awareness about yourself. Because if you can teach that to your kids, like I'll give you an example, my daughter, emotional breakdown like every five-year-old does, you know, and I'm sitting there talking to her saying, baby, you have the control. You have the control. I want you to breathe through your nose really deep and breathe out really, you know, as well. And keep doing that. Do it with me. And I'll do it with her to calm her down emotionally. And then I'm like, and of course she's in the beginning, I don't have control, you know, like, and all this, of course. But once that happens, it really made a switch in me because I remember the next day when I did that for her, she goes to my wife and says, Daddy really helped me. He calmed me down. And, you know, and I was just like, oh, dude, you don't realize how much of an effect you being able to go through hits and have your own emotional control in place happens. And you can't always do it. You got to cut yourself a break when you get mad or, you know, curse sometimes or whatever. Right. So
It's emotional control. And, you know, and for this, you know, $400,000 hit you took, that's such a huge number. But, you know, you handled it, what it sounds like a professional. And, you know, and had this opportunity to also, you know, really, I mean, had a teaching moment to your daughter on emotional control. And, you know, because those are when those things start. And, you know, that brings into something that we all see as adults, where you see people who don't have good emotional control. And then, you know, and I always wonder, I go, you know, where did this start? You know, at what point was it that there was something that went off the rails that, you know, someone was able to, you know, get so far down the road that, you know, you see bad decisions being made as a result of, you know, poor emotional control.
Right. And I think it's important to understand, like, these, you know, a lot of times when they don't have that emotional control, it's a lack of confidence in themselves. Because when you take a hit and you stand back up and you actually become successful after that, you become strong, you know, and your mentality becomes strong, and you're able to have a lot more of that control than you would have ever had before. And a lot of people haven't taken those hits. And so they're going to be more angry at people and, you know, more fly off the handle, instead of saying, how do I get what I need out of this situation by having the right tact and the right strategy, instead of, because that negativity towards others doesn't ever get you what you want. You know, maybe every once in a while when you got to chew somebody out or something, but, like, you know, it's not usually common, right? So that's going to help.
Max, you said something that kind of, like, where does it start? And I think that's a good question, because everyone at some point takes a hit in their life, and, like, getting back up, like, you know, I remember watching my, you know, family members, and I mean, they were pretty strong men, but, you know, I had to kind of, like, consciously go to the next level and just, you know, I'm working on, like, Matt's level of emotional management. Well, I'm curious, Matt, like, where did that start for you? Is that something that you saw yourself growing up in your family, or did you have to, like, make a conscious shift to be like that?
So I definitely had, I'll say, not anger issues, but I would get angry for 3 seconds and then be fine afterwards, or, you know, get mad when and have that outburst and then stop myself, you know, over a period of time. And my dad had that too. He would get angry about stuff and stubborn about stuff. I saw him growing up being, even though he had that, you know, he was a military guy. He was a ranger and a sniper in Vietnam. He was a black belt in karate, and, like, literally was my, you know, crutch in a lot of ways, you know, where I'd go to him and had a last massive amount of respect for him. There was also a healthy amount of fear there too, because he's a strong dude and he's going to tell you exactly what he thinks, and you're not going to go and talk to him in certain ways. You know what I mean? And so there was that clear boundary. At the same time, he was really strong, and I lost him when I was 26 years old and he was 56 years old. And it was the hardest, probably one of the hardest things of my entire life to deal with, because he was the person that I would go to with all of the problems in my life, you know, that I needed advice from and things like that. And I still remember the day before he died, I told him he could go. And I had a 1-year-old little sister at the time, and she's now 19 years old now, which is crazy. Doesn't care about money at all. I keep trying to talk to her about money, but she doesn't care. She's 19. But, you know, and I told my dad, hey, you know, I got this. You can go. Like, I'll make sure my sister's taken care of. I'll make sure my brother's taken care of. And I think it screwed me up a little bit, right? Where I grind to mentally take care of the family to the detriment of myself. And I was doing that for detriment of my health for a long time too, because, you know, I was 35 pounds more than I am right now, and would eat bad and not exercise as much. And it affected my home life massively, because I was so focused on grind. I have to do this. I have to take care of everybody. And I've always had that in my head, where I have this underlying psychological need to take care of people, whether I should or not. Sometimes I shouldn't waste time helping, like, random people, you know, because it's to my detriment. But I had to get out of that, right? I had to go to counseling to say, what is causing this inside me? Let me go back and think about what has affected me in my life. And that was what made me have a lot more of that emotional control, is realizing the reasons why I was the way I was, and focusing on too much work and not enough family, and having to feel like I have to grind, you know, I have to get this done, because otherwise my family is not going to get what they need, which is untrue, right?
And do you feel like that effort to, and I'm so sorry for your loss, what you described as, you know, that you, it was this hard event that you really, you know, had some massive growth from, and stepped into a role of both stress and, you know, this, you know, giving your father this peace, you know, before he passed. You know, was that something that he also taught you in a lot of those skills and growing up? Say, hey, you need to be an individual who when the challenge comes up, you need to meet it? Or did you, when it came to counseling, other things you described, were those things that you brought in yourself and said, those weren't things that came from my father, but I have to figure them out going forward?
Yeah. You know, I really think a lot of that came from the upbringing I had from my father and my mom, where, you know, especially my father being a strong man, it was expected that we're going to be strong too. You know what I mean? And there was very little emotion in my household, not a lot of hugs and all that kind of stuff. It was, you know, my dad was working hard, working two jobs and stuff like that. My mom worked as well. And, you know, my dad, it took my parents going through a divorce before he realized that he was too much of a hard ass and loosened up a little bit, you know what I mean? And getting out of the emotional situation of marriage and all that stuff. And he wasn't, you know, crazy or anything like that. But, you know, at the same time, a lot of that he taught me, hey, this is what you do. You stand up to that adversity and you push yourself and you take responsibility, you know, for what you're doing. And I think that's what I was probably emotionally and mentally doing at the time by giving my dad that peace when he passed and telling him that, you know, when that occurred. You know, don't get me wrong, it was still the hardest damn thing in the world. But at the same time, you realize all of a sudden I stepped into the leader of the family role at 26, which honestly was, you know, this adversity is what gives you the character that you need to be in order to be successful in business and family. And I've had a lot of it, you know, from my parents, you know, divorce to my dad passing to failing in business immediately. Like when I quit my CPA firm job to go into real estate, we were flipping a bunch of houses. I got an office at the World Trade Center in Long Beach on the 23rd floor. We're doing everything wrong, but I thought I was dope because we're flipping houses and I had a 790 credit score with 290 grand worth of empty credit card lines available to me. And my whole ego was based off of this persona of me being a CPA where I don't ever miss bills. I like always make sure I'm taking, you know, take care of business that we're flipping. And, you know, all of a sudden when we lost everything and I lost my credit, my ego was destroyed, you know, where I was just like, oh my God, what? The worst thing that I could think would happen to me at the time was my credit getting destroyed. Now I could think of some worse things, but you know, at the same, and obviously this is very little adversity compared to a lot of things people go through with a lot of different deaths and stuff like that. And, you know, kids losing kids or other stuff is just not even a comparison, but it's this stuff that happens to you that gives you that character, I think, over time. And I think I had a good base with my father that, you know, started there. I have a ton of respect for him and I still give his good friends a lot of crap still to this day and talk trash just like he would, you know, so.
those tragedies, you're right. There's such a, I don't want to say competition, but in the grand scope, you know, there's always these other things you hear about and you go, my gosh, you know, who went through whatever that was. I think for your story, what I find really fascinating about it is that, you know, for what was, you know, pretty serious tragedy, that you were a swimmer. You know, you went, hey, I'm just going to step up, you know, and I'm going to step up and I'm going to do this.
I'm curious, man, you were talking about like, I've been struggling with trying to, I've been getting better, but like how to, you know, manage time, not just in business, but in personal life with family and, you know, making sure I'm a good dad and like coming up with ways to help my kids become an adult someday. And you mentioned you're going to like go speak to people about this and you got to put together a presentation on teaching that to people. You know, what does that look like? What are you doing there?
So look, don't get me wrong. I think we're all a work in process in this area as, you know, getting out of our own head and making sure we're living in the moment with the kids, right? I think the biggest thing is when you are with the kids, making sure you're living in the moment. You're not, you know, focused on other things and constantly, you know, in your head thinking about the next business thing. Being there focused on them is a big key, right? And, you know, obviously everybody can get the hell off their phones, you know, and stuff like that. Of course, all of us can. It's a big addiction for, you know, tons of people out there, including myself sometimes because I got a ton of things going. At the same time, I try my hardest to literally have this, you know, system in place where I'm like a certain times I'm separating my business and personal life. And I do a lot of that through meditation. It helps me clear my mind to like, before going in the house, just sit there for 10 minutes and breathe. You know, I do that in the morning. And then right before I try to go in the house, because how do you turn your brain off when you're going 100 miles an hour and you got a million things and you still have a million things to do, but you're like, I got to cut it off. You know, I have to separate. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is planning, right? Like, what do you want to do with your kids? Like I have a list on my desk that's like, you know, make sure all the things I want to make sure I get done every day that's outside of work, right? Like that's meditation, you know, proper sleep, vitamins, working out, playing with the kids, planning outings with the kids where, hey, you're just going to go to the park twice a week with the kids. And then other times of the week for twice a week, you're going to go play, I'll call it, you know, cash flow for kids or something like that, right? Robert Kiyosaki financial education game. Or you're going to teach them something like that. Like I literally have a list of every class, every topic that I want my kids to learn, including law and real estate and finance and, you know, it's and then emotional control and relationships and things like that. The things that I think growing up, a lot of us weren't taught, you know, like you taught how to deal with girls, you know, when you're growing up as a boy, you know, you're not, you know, like, yeah, you might talk about it a little bit, but it's not like something that's taught to you on how to actually not be nervous and how to like, you know, how to break a conversation and really just have confidence. Right. And so, focusing on the things that you think you didn't get growing up and making a list of those things to say, these are the things I really want to teach. Like I started doing videos with my son where I'm, you know, talking to him about what his favorite things are just like this. And, you know, on a video. And of course he's like, I was like, what's your favorite thing in the world, buddy? And he's like, I love it when you coach me at basketball, dad. So of course now I'm coaching for the rest of my life, but you know, so.
This is great. This is great. So you have them on this full curriculum of things.
Well, right. And don't get me wrong. Sometimes it's way over their pay grade right now, you know, for law and, you know, auditing, you know, and accounting.
You done the cash flow game? Have you done that one with them?
Yeah, they do that. And, you know, I try to teach them about the mentality. And of course, both of my kids hate the government as much as I do. So that's a little personality trait that they got, you know, so. But yeah, I mean, you know, looking at it from that scale and saying, what do I want to teach them? Is there something that I can talk to them about to teach them, you know, consistently on a daily basis, just out of this topic list? Is there like something I could bring up that would, they would be interested in just to have a conversation each day, or, you know, every, if you can't do that, maybe every other day or something like that, to just have a 15 minute conversation with your kids about those topics and teaching them something that you think is valuable. You know, I remember my dad, he literally made us get out a checkbook and taught us that. When I was doing accounting classes in college, he was teaching accounting at Loyola Marymount in LA and literally made me do extra homework. I'm like, I'm in college, like, screw you, dude. I don't want to do this. You know, like, are you kidding me right now? All I care about is girls. Here, have an old English 40 with me, dad. He's like, seriously, an old English 40? What's wrong with you? You know, so, but like, that's what you think about in college, right? So, but it's, you know, at the same time, even though I didn't want to do it and I knew I didn't want to do it, those things were majorly ingrained in me, right? And it's cutting your kids a break and realizing, yeah, they're never, ever, ever going to do exactly what you want them to do. I specifically remember my dad catching me and my buddies in the backyard smoking pot when we were like 15 years old or something like that. And he didn't, I was shocked. He didn't, my friends were about to run over the wall because they didn't want to get in trouble with their parents. And he didn't get any of us in trouble. He just said, look, guys, you guys are too young. Don't lie to me about it. I won't ever like get you in trouble for this, but I'll talk to you about it and tell you why you shouldn't be doing it. And that permeated massively with me just to be open and say, look, you're going to be stupid. You're going to make mistakes. I did some really stupid things in junior high and high school that you're going, wow, how did I live? You know what I mean? So how did I survive? And I think you got to cut your kids a break and realize they're going to make their own mistakes and they're not going to follow exactly in your footsteps what you want, you know?
He used it as an education moment, which is the better way to have him be available to you, really, than closing that door. You hear a lot of fathers who don't, you know, they blow their stack and they get really pissed off. And all of a sudden, when there's more serious issues, the kids don't come back to the dad. They don't want to talk to him because they know they get mad, versus that scenario that really probably opened a lot of communication with you guys.
Right. And it's funny because you get different traits from different parents. Even though my dad made me do that with the bookkeeping, he wasn't necessarily great with saving money and doing all that stuff. He would spend money. My mom saved like $20,000, 25 grand in college while she, you know, like penny pinching everything, and was the saver and, you know, super responsible with money and all that stuff. And it's funny because you get different traits from different people. And I think having a two-parent household really does significantly help with, you know, the upbringing, because a father is super important because they give that guidance and direction and that like sternness that I think kids need. And the mom obviously gives the emotional support a lot more than the dad does, you know? So, both of those things are massively important from a well-rounded kid standpoint, you know, of course.
That was freaking awesome, man. That was so many strings we could pull and we could go forever. But like, thank you for your stories and your openness and like, honest, the amount of value you provided. Just me sitting here listening, like I got to make a list for my kids, like right away. So thank you.
Yeah, get it in your head so that it's always there. Like I literally go out and I'm like, okay, what the heck could I, because sometimes when you're in the moment, how do you think about that, right? So like write down 50 things you could do for free with your kids or, you know, minimal cost so that you're like, pick one, you know, like go do what, do it, just get out, you know, and go do it.
So Matthew, do you have a meditation that you, guided meditation that is on YouTube? Do you just have something you do yourself or how do you do that?
So I actually follow Wim Hof. I don't know if you know who he is, but he basically has been able to control his body temperature and his immune system and heal himself through meditation and breathing, which is incredible. They've actually showed him in freezing weather where his body temperature is at a consistent degrees where it's not getting cold because he's able to heat himself internally. And so the power of meditation is key. I really just try to go and sit there for 15 minutes at a minimum each time I meditate and try to get out of my own head and breathe and focus on my breathing, because breathing is, you know, getting oxygen in your system is probably one of the healthiest things you can do as well. So just breathing deep and then exhaling deep consistently for 15 minutes straight really calms you. Like if you, Andrew Huberman was one of the ones that I read this for, what he said, hey, breathe deep, and then take one more breath, like deeper, and it like opens up these endorphins inside you where it like gets all the oxygen in your system and really helps you de-stress massively. And so I try to practice doing that and just clearing my mind. And it's hard because you will automatically start thinking and you're like, beat yourself up about it. And you're like, go back to your breathing. So it takes practice to do that. But I try to follow Wim Hof on that and also try to meditate a couple times a day doing that, especially when you're dealing with high stress environments. There's days where you're dealing with, you know, 50 problems before noon on a Monday. And you're just like, oh God, I got to breathe. Like, let me just, you start to feel it in your gut. You start to feel it in your stress levels. And you're like, no, let me just take a step back for a minute. And then also thinking about what you're grateful for while you're doing that really helps put the fears and stresses in perspective and saying, hey, I got my health. My kids are healthy right now. I have a loving wife and a family and, you know, I'm coaching basketball and, you know, putting the real life in perspective instead of you're going, this is money. It doesn't really matter. I'll be dead and it's all going to be gone. You know, who cares? You know,
it's even funny money with how much the government's printing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all fake, you know, so go trade and barter food. That's why I want to farm, you know?
When we've talked about so much already, is there anything that's going on in the world today that, you know, you really feel like you are want to be ahead of with your kids? You know, you mentioned, you know, the your father kind of catching you guys, you know, when you're 15, are there any of these experiences that you're either projecting on that, you know, you're going to deal with eventually or things that are going on right now that you're really wanting to focus on?
So, you know, a lot of what I care about a lot is, you know, two primary things, financial education and how to, and also so that they, because 90% of the people out there don't have the right financial education to be able to support themselves. I see a lot of doctors and attorneys and things like that that make great money, but they don't know the direction of where they're going. They don't understand how to never trade their time for money again or build those assets that will do that for them long term, you know, as well, and have control over their real future instead of just giving it to a broker, for example, and letting them, you know, do what they do with it, right? And with lack of incentive for performance and all that kind of stuff involved. So there's so many scams out there that you see a lot of people taking hits and a lot of lack of knowledge base about how to develop, you know, passive cash flow streams, how to invest and do homework on, you know, property and deals and investments. And so like, I have a big yearning to teach them about that, but also I think it's super important nowadays to focus a lot on self-sustainment and being able to survive outside of the current system that we are in. Learning how to grow food, for example, learning how, you know, water purification works and, you know, self-sustainment works and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, I think is the utmost importance right now. I personally am very nervous about the stability of the overall economy and our governments and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and central bank digital currencies and all these risks that I see out there. And I think that the risk of, you know, global financial collapse and U.S. collapse is greater than it's ever been because of the amount of printing and the instability that creates out there. And I think it's super important to be able to survive long term, to know those things. And so as a parent, you're like, how do I make sure my kids are happy and they don't die? You know, like yeah, those two things, right? So, you know, and so it's like, what are the risks? Okay, like, look at this giant risk that nobody really, there's people that talk about it. I'm a prepper, so I got food and water supplies, but I also live in Southern California going.
I like to call it homesteading, because if you're only planning on prepping, then the preppers, you know, it's the, you know, because you said something that, you know, being self-sustaining and a lot of us, big wake-up call when COVID happened, when, wow, things can really get crazy. And with everything you're talking about, it's so funny, because I am going to ask you for this. But if you've got good books, recommendations on exactly what you said, how to purify water, how to store food, how to collect rainwater, how to grow your own crops, and maybe a small area in your backyard. If you've got books on these, I would love to have them. In fact, we'll put them on the website. And, you know, because I'm sure that you're not alone in people who have interest in those things. I have interest in those things, absolutely. And, you know, and we look at, I mean, you really nailed it on the head in regards to, there are risks out there that in our lifetime, we haven't previously had to really deal with them. And, you know, when you're the father of the family, you're the one who also has to worry about these things. Hopefully they never occur. But if they do, do you have 30 days supply of food and water? And are you prepared to be able to collect water, clean it, and live if, I'm going to say it, if the grid goes down and, you know, and we just have to.
Right, right. And I think that's, you know, I have some survival guides that I bought, you know, my wife bought me, but I watch a lot of YouTube videos and just, you know, ooh and ah over their supplies, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, looking at it from that angle, I mean, in addition to the homestead environment and having that self-sustainability, plus, of course, all the pesticides and the poisons and the food and the lack of micronutrients in the food, you're going, how do I get my kids clean food that has the right micronutrients, because the soil's been all destroyed from, you know, all the, you know, Roundup and all that stuff, right? And so, you know, I look at that side of things and the importance of homesteading from a health perspective. And we have a massive garden in our yard and lots of, like, you know, flower pots and, you know, big raised flower beds in our front and backyard and stuff like that, and teaching them those things now. But also, you know, some of the other things that I think are important from not just the homesteading, but you know, a plan B type situation, right? At some point, and I hope it's never during our lifetime, but at some point, the U.S. is going to turn communism. It's going to turn into socialist and then communist at some point, right? It's already, you see it starting to go there. I'm being very optimistic by saying this, because I live in California and I feel like I already live in communism. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's not real communism yet, right? But what I'm saying, though, is that having a plan B, learning how to get additional passports, learning how to set yourself up to be able to move out of the country if you needed to flee. I can't believe I'm even saying that out of the U.S., right? Because it's usually been the safe haven type situation. But, you know, I'm, you know, looking at the risks, saying, how do I protect my family, right? How do I make sure long term that they are, you know, have options and can move? And don't get me wrong, it scares the hell out of me to give them the experience of traveling internationally, because if they move away from me, I'm going to kick their butt, you know? So, but, you know, I'm like, they better not leave me, you know? I do have a bug out bag. Yes, I do. So, and I have 6 55 gallon water barrels on the side of my house right now too, by the way. So,
dude, I get it. I totally do. I get it. And I get it from the standpoint of, you know, these things, you see these things and you think, you know, wars do happen. You know, wars do happen. These things do happen, you know, and with the country going socialist or communist, I really hope that it doesn't. But I also understand the method of big government, with how they say democracies work really well until the democracy recognizes that it can vote itself more money. And once that occurs, then you end up in this situation where the government continues to kind of grow, because it becomes this entity that now has more and more weight. And how do they support more and more weight? With more jobs, they have more taxation. You know, people don't quite recognize this, but all of the money, everything, all of the money that gets spent domestic, abroad, services, infrastructure, everything is 100% all over the world is covered by U.S. private business. Because if you remove the private business, then you would only have government, which would be communism. So all the salaries for the government and everyone else, it's covered by the U.S. private sector. You know, and that, I don't know if I want to call it shrinking, you know, it's still a growing body, but, you know, but there's a question with how in check, you know, the government is in regards to a lot of these things. And, you know, and you in the business world and all of us in this world, you know, we often feel these things. I have hope. I'm still in expectation, seeing the pushback right now. And I like seeing it. And I like to be the optimist that says, hey, you know what, we're going to be able to, you know, push off the communism and socialism. And we are, because there's going to be a realization that it doesn't work. And when that occurs, you will have another revolution, because that cannot work. My fear is the in-between time that could take to happen.
And I feel like a lot of people have really woken up over the last like couple years, especially seeing the extra pushes from the government and, you know, bodies and, you know, the kind of system that's actually surrounding us that was hidden for so long is now becoming very, very apparent. And so I'm optimistic from that standpoint as well. And I, you know, it's just these, all these things are, what if, you know, like, what do I do to protect my family? And if that risk comes to fruition, you know, so, that's how I look at this. And I hope that I'm, you know, hitting all the risks and all that. And I think, you know, keep thinking of moving to Montana and living on 20 acres or something like that. And, you know, just, you know, it's a different life, but at the same time, like the beauty and the nature, that's, I think, how humans are supposed to be, right? Getting kids outside. I don't know if you remember when we were kids, my parents were like, get outside and don't come back till the streetlights are on. I don't want to see your butt in this house. And go ahead and climb up to the top of this giant tree and go off of skateboard ramps and almost die. You know, it's like stuff like that.
My parents just weren't there. They didn't say come back at this time. They just weren't anywhere. You know, it was just, you know, we just got home when we did. But yeah, no, as far as living outside, no, I love the Montana story. Absolutely. You know, the getting back to nature.
Need another zero on that acreage for it to be right. 200, I think I've done the math. That's my end game, dude. 300 acre beef ranch. That's what I'm doing everything for. As I can, as soon as possible. Yeah.
Sure. I could totally see that. You showing up on this horse, just a big beard, just long hair, this title, you know, behind this beef cattle ranch. I could totally see it.
Yeah, I'm all about it, man. I grew up on a ranch, which I was very fortunate, but like, I couldn't wait to leave. 2 weeks after I graduated high school, I was gone. I've been in the city since, and I can't wait to get back now.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, when you're younger, you know, it's a harder life, I think. There's less people around. You want to be around people and in, you know, seeing stuff and exploring stuff. So I hear that a lot.
But at the same time, it's like, I look around me and, you know, all these city folk don't really know how to like work that hard.
Yeah, well, I mean, the manual labor versus the desk jobs, and there's that that skill set that you're talking about, Matt, which is, you know, how to do some of these tasks that, you know, is a little bit lost, you know, because we go to the grocery store for our food. We have water that's available out of the sink, you know, and then the question of, you know, what could happen if those things weren't available, it really has everyone really immediately scratch their head and go, well, how could those things not be available? And you know, and again, as we say this, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole on these things, but it's one of those things that, you know, I just view as plan for the worst, have a plan, and then hope for the best, you know, and hopefully things will, you know, maintain the way that they currently are. And, you know, and heaven forbid you end up owning a 20 acre ranch in Montana and these things never happen anyway, and you just own the ranch. So on, just moving away from that rabbit hole, because I know we could actually go down that for a long time. Business-wise, what are you working on right now? So you told us about a lot of your history, a lot of what you've done, and what are you doing now on a go forward? And is there anything that, you know, anyone who's listening to this would want to contact you for or anything else also? Because we'd love hearing if there's a need for that.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm very much an active operator. I'm slowly moving towards being a lot more passive and, you know, bringing in additional teams to buy my time back and things like that so that I can take off. My goal is to take Mondays and Fridays off and, you know, basically take the kids to the park and the, you know, and the beach and do those types of things a lot more on Mondays and Fridays, very, very consistently. And so right now I'm focused on, we're in the process and have under contract a 645 unit mobile home park in Wichita, Kansas. We have a debt fund that we run and we do promissory notes where we lend it out to flippers in different markets around the country. I'm about to do a joint venture flip package of houses that we're doing multiple flips on in a package of houses that we'll raise a couple $1 million on and split it with investors that are working with us. We are involved in multiple other projects that are all mostly cash flow related where we just help investors do our investments create financial freedom in their life through real estate, right? That's literally what we do. And I teach people how to structure their investments in their life in a specific way. And I do so many different asset classes that are good for certain people at certain times. Like I wouldn't go tell, an 80-year-old, to go buy a bunch of single family home rental properties and manage the managers themselves. Like you just, that's not in the cards at that time. They need promissory notes to get them cash flow, right? So every single month. And so, we teach people how to do these strategies to fit their life, and we help them with the structuring and the legalities and the liability protection and how to actually protect them by doing the homework on a lot of these deals ourselves. And so we serve these different deals up for those specific purposes, because there's a big lack of that out there, right? There's a lot of people that don't know how to create this financial freedom. Like the majority of people are not in real estate, even if, that's my sphere of influence is a lot of real estate investors and you think it's common knowledge. But if you go out to the general public and you start talking about financial freedom and real estate, they think I got to go buy a house myself. I got to go invest in a multifamily myself. Oh my God, how do I do the financing? How do I deal with this? And you don't have to do any of that. You just got to invest with the right operator and do the homework on that operator that already knows what they're doing, that specializes in that asset class, so you can make money along with them. Now, you got to do a lot of homework and you got to know how to do that homework, but it's a hell of a lot easier than knowing how to do a flip and knowing how to do a multifamily and learning the trials and tribulations you go there. So that's what I really have a passion at, is teaching people how to create that financial freedom and teaching people how to be able to build that within their life based on what they want in their life as far as time freedom and cash flow and their own comfort level, right? So that's what I love doing, that stuff, because it's rewarding. I got multiple people that are retired right now that are making like $30,000 a month with me on projects. And they're just like traveling the world and doing that kind of stuff, you know? So
the reason I'm asking about that meditation is, we'll put on the website, the Real Estate Dads podcast website, we'll put a link to your website. And if you've got any books on any of those homesteading survivalist things, we'll put a list of those on the website, and we'll put a link to Wim Hof if you have any of his stuff that guests would find of interest. And Matt, you've been such a great guest. I'm just so thankful that we had you here to share so many, great things to do with your kids. And also, from someone who has just accomplished so much, because there's so much trading, our own personal time to do these things. And, for you to accomplish so much, you've really done a lot of that, multiplying your own time by doing things effectively, which clearly shows if you're able to put together, the course curriculum for your kids of these really fantastic experiences and things to really prepare them and also have bonding with their father, which is just so great. So thank you so much for sharing. This has just really been fantastic. All right. This is the Real Estate Dads podcast with Matthew Owens, and we'll catch you guys up on the next episode.